No.
The only changes that I know is section 87, and maybe Karen or Jerry can help me. And there's the change there, appointments of independent counsel and conflict of interest. Is that a change?
What does that do?
On page 60.
58, 60.
And section 90 looks like a new section. Mm-hmm. Representative Navarre?
Chairman, it makes actually a little difference. We can either have a vote to put it in or have a vote to take it out.
I know.
Which is the same.
Okay, would the clerk call the roll on Representative Martin's motion?
Representative Hoffman.
Yeah.
Could you restate the motion, please?
The labor and
commerce. Labor and commerce.
Representative Martin's motion is for labor and commerce.
Representative Hoffman? I said yes.
No.
No. Martin?
Yes.
Representative Navarre?
Yes.
Representative Parnell?
Yes.
Representative Terrio?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Busendorf?
No.
Representative Hanley?
Yes.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative McClain?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
4 yea, 7 nay.
Mr. Chairman?
Chairman McClain?
Yes, I'd like to utilize the work draft for CS for HB 534 Finance as our working document.
Are there any objections?
Yeah, but...
Any objections? Any objections? Please call the roll.
No.
Can we have an ad?
You still got it.
What I want to do here temporarily is to go back to Senate Bill 190 and get an update, and it's my understanding that Brian Petrie is here to give us an update on what happened.
Mr. Chairman, Philip C. Petrie, Operations Manager at Child Support, for the record. I just left the meeting of House State Affairs, and the committee voted favorably to move the bill from State Affairs. They zeroed both physical notes for the department and the court system, and we can concur with that.
Does anyone have any questions of Mr. Petrie? Chairman. Representative Brown.
Were there any amendments made to the bill?
Mr. Chair, through the chair, Representative Brown, there was an attempt to add an amendment to the bill that failed. Representative Davies attempted to add House Bill 458, and it was not adopted.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, Carol, what is the next committee of referral of Senate Bill 190?
Judiciary.
To the Judiciary Committee. Okay, so the request that we had before the Finance Committee is to waive the Finance Committee referral. Is there any objections to waiving the Finance Committee referral?
Could I just ask another question?
Representative Brown?
Well, with respect to the fiscal impact of the bill, how are the requirements going to be accomplished without additional funding for child support enforcement?
Through the chair, Representative Brown. We'll have to absorb them with additional or existing staff. The division's fiscal note was for one accounting clerk and one clerk for $109,000 of general fund funds. It will be an additional burden, but one that I believe that 190 is important enough to us due to the fact it brings the state into compliance, that we will have to accept that burden.
Mr. Chairman, isn't this the second major piece of legislation on which you've not attached an appropriate fiscal note to account for new costs?
Chairman, Representative Brown, through the chair. I believe we did prepare physical notes for both bills, but neither of them made it to the Finance Committee, to my knowledge. And as I mentioned in the earlier testimony, the legislature has been very generous in giving us 43 new employees this year, which we very badly needed. And considering the budget situation, I'm willing to live with what we can get already, although I know the impact that it's going to have on the division. And at the LBNA meeting earlier, I testified before members of this committee that we would have to come back next year and ask for additional personnel to address other areas of deficiencies within the division. Yes, I would like more people, but the practical aspect of it is I think I have to live where the division has to live with what we have, unless you feel it would. There's other avenues.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
If I could inquire, what is the status of the conference committee report on this particular division? One of the amendments in the House was to extend those 43 employees beyond their cutoff date. They were only funded to go for half of the year, and then we added in the House money to keep them on. But if that resource is not there, then I think there is a very serious problem. And in light of the audit that's come out saying we stand to lose millions of dollars, I'm just thinking we're being pretty short-sighted for failure to fund a few hundred thousand. We're risking many millions of dollars.
Representative Brown, the conference committee has not taken up the Hess budget yet at this time.
Well, this is part of revenue. Is it not part of the revenue budget?
Through the chair, yes, it is a part. And I was basing my comments on the assumption that those positions would remain. We asked for 42 new positions from LBNA. 26 of them were permanent positions, which are funded and are requested in the 95 budget. The other 16 positions, I believe, there's been action to make those also permanent if the budget is passed in its existing condition. And I would have to couch any testimony I have in that those positions are critical for the division's making an effort to comply with the audit that we're currently under and get into compliance.
I don't have my revenue notes with me today, so I don't have an answer for you.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Martin?
I think that the gentleman is right that we've been very generous to the department. It's my understanding that the child enforcement area has not been touched, even with the conference committee. As of last night, it looks like that part hasn't been touched at all. So child enforcement looks good. Plus the new equipment, you got almost $2.5 million, if not $3 million, in new computers and equipment. And good God, to be able to run the DOD department, Department of Defense, on that. So I think by the generosity of the state complying with the federal government and 190, there should not be much of a new fiscal impact.
Yeah, I believe those positions we're talking about, and Mr. Petrie, please help me, didn't budget not to take those positions from 6 months and extend them to the
yes.
full year?
In this year's budget, there has been a recommendation that be done for a full year. But as Representative Martin has stated, I have not heard of any decrements or any change to that, and I know it's still under consideration, but that was in consideration with my testimony that we get the 42 positions for the full year, and I believe Representative Brown has added an additional child support officer too and some additional legal staff at some point in the process. So there are a total of 43 positions now in the budget, along with additional staff at legal, the Department of Law. And I am basing any testimony on the fact that that will have favorable consideration by the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Well, Representative Hanley was going to get his notes on the Department of Revenue, but we have basically closed out the Department of Revenue, and I can't recall any reductions being made there at all.
I'll just say for the record that I disagree with Representative Martin's characterization of the adequacy of the budget, and I think the amendment we adopted here after the budget left the subcommittee was necessary to bring it to a minimal level, and if the conference committee has in fact adopted those dollars, then that's what I would just like to know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we have our update on Senate Bill 190. My only comment was if Senate Bill 190 doesn't pass, if you think the budget's bad, no. Wait till it's failure if we don't pass this bill. Thank you, Mr. Petrie.
So can we waive it?
Yeah.
Pardon? Can we waive it?
Well, that's what I was trying
to do. We can waive it, sure.
But we're talking about a little fiscal note instead of waiving it.
Waive the thing. And hard enough.
Which one are we talking about here? Okay, I've just been informed that the unallocated reduction that the House had given has been deleted, that the Senate numbers were the ones taken, and also the concern being expressed was taken care of in the Category 1 motions which we adopted, which meant then basically we were the same as the Senate, so there were no reductions. So, any more discussion on Senate Bill 190? Is there any objections to Senate Bill 190 being waived from the Finance Committee? Any objections? Hearing none, then Senate Bill 190 will be waived from the Finance Committee. And we'll be back at this time then on... I better get off my right package. Committee substitute for House Bill number 534, Finance. And I would like to start with the proposed amendments that we have from the agencies.
Oh. Mr. Chair,
that one on the floor.
Not here.
Representative Perio?
I realized to make a change my vote that I had misunderstood the last motion that we took a vote on, and although changing my vote from a nay to a yay doesn't change the outcome, I wonder if I can change it just for the record.
From a nay to a yay?
Yes.
Okay. Did the clerk get that? On the last vote that was taken on the adoption of the vehicle, Senator Terrio wishes to change his vote from a nay to a yay, which means then that the House Finance Committee work draft was adopted as the vehicle for under discussion by a vote of 5-6. No, that's not right.
The judiciary version,
the labor and commerce version. Failed to be the work draft by a 5-6 vote. Okay, suggested amendments. Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, just a couple very brief remarks here before Ken Sykes from our Division of Insurance goes into the technicalities of the amendment. You received a letter from Governor Hickel asking that there not be amendments to this bill, and I just need to explain that we've had a little bit of a follow-up with this. The Senate Judiciary Committee did adopt these amendments, and then, by mistake, the bill that was adopted by the committee was adopted, didn't include these. So we would ask that you consider these amendments that I believe the chairman has in front of him here. And then we're asking that you not have other amendments. Of course, that's your prerogative to take them up if you want. Our concern and part of the reason... Of course.
Thank you.
I just want to explain why we asked the governor for that letter. Is our concern is that this bill, because the title is wide, ends up being the vehicle for having Van Bean or remote work sites or other workman comp thing piled on top of it. And if that happens, then we're probably going to have to work against our own bill. We don't want those workman's comp and other things loaded onto this. We feel those should be dealt with separately. So that's our position, and Ken Sykes would be able to take...
Mr. Chairman. Also, in that mix up, the language in Section 89 that you're discussing this morning on preferred providers is not in the Senate bill version, so I wanted to make that clear. Mm-hmm. The amendments that you have before you are mostly technical amendments to keep us in line with our National Association of Insurance Commissioners, which is a national accreditation force for all insurance companies throughout the United States. These changes were made, again, at Senate Judiciary, but just did not get in the version. Most of the changes are technical in nature. They do not, they do not inhibit any competition or competitive forces in Alaska, and they have been written so that they do give a competitive advantage to our Alaska domestics. Everybody in the Alaska insurance industry has signed off on the amendments, and it was just an oversight on our part. They didn't get in on the Senate side, so we wanted to try and take care of it.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Sykes? The Commissioner, Representative Martin?
Yes. First, Mr. Sykes, we've had some discussion on that new 87, which I'd like to bring up and give your opinion, but also we've had nothing on the new sections on 60 and 61, appointment of independent counsel, and I'm very curious of what that means. But also, since you're the one I think we depend on more than anyone else protecting the state's rights to choose providers of insurance, how would this new section 87 interfere with the things that the state had been doing for its consumers?
Representative Martin, through the chair, if I may, let me speak to the easy amendment, and that is the one that wasn't spoken to on page 60, the appointment of independent counsel and conflict of interest. That section deals with a practice that is written in the law right now called the CUMIS Council. It's a decision out of California where an insured or policyholder has a right to hire his own independent counsel to defend him under his own insurance policy. The CUMIS Council has been followed by the courts, but there's always been challenges to that when those situations arise. What this section attempts to do is clarify how it shall be handled, and this language is based on what has happened in, I think, California case law and Washington case law. So it's really taking a situation that has already been practiced in the market for a number of years and putting it down in legislative form so that insurance companies have one standard to follow at this point.
Well, with this new provision, would it interfere with the governor's concern? Would you agree? And then we'd have to get the Senate to quickly agree too.
Correct.
Is it that important to keep it in? We got 3 or 4 days at the most to get out of here.
For this section, I don't, not speaking for the Senate, but I don't think there would be any problem.
If it were dropped.
Mr. Sykes, what we're going to do for expedite the process here, we're going to speak on the proposed amendments. Then once we act on those, we will recognize Representative Martin for any changes that he wishes to make. But at this time, let's focus on what the administration here is presenting. So do we have any other questions on the amendments as proposed by the administration here? Any questions? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion. Representative Navarre?
You know I have a conflict because I have this letter from the governor. I'll move the
amendment. We have a motion then that we incorporate these proposed amendments into the committee substitute for House Bill 534 Finance Work Draft. Representative Brown?
With respect to the part of the amendment on page 9, line 9, that's dealing with these confidential reports, what's the effect of the change that's made there? And why are the reports not subject to subpoena? That seems odd.
Okay, which section?
Page 9, subsection C. Your amendment deletes a portion of that sentence dealing with the confidential reports. A report obtained or disclosed to the director under this section is confidential, is not subject to subpoena, may not be made public by the director, and then you want to delete the National Association of Insurance Commissioners.
Okay. The reason for that section, Representative Brown through the chair, the reason for the deletion of that section, when the National Association of Insurance Commissioners receives any information, it's a public document. The director of insurance within each state jurisdiction has the authority to ascertain which items he would like to keep proprietary for the insurer and which items he tends to make public. The reason being is for market competition and market practices. Currently in the health field, there is proprietary knowledge by insurers, by medical providers, etc., on individuals in the market that we receive as a division, which are kept in confidential records by the Division of Insurance. To let those records out could do irreparable harm to the market and to the individuals affected by those policies.
If I could follow up, what is the purpose or why would these records not be subject to subpoena?
That one I don't have an answer for that.
Any further discussion? Are there any objections to the motion to adopt the amendments as presented by the agency? Any objections? Hearing none, then those amendments have been adopted. Okay, further discussion on House Bill 534.
Only, Mr. Chairman, we do have an answer now for Representative Brown's question, and that is that they can subpoena the records directly from the company, but they just can't. It takes the division out of that role. They'll get access to them directly from the company.
Mr. Chairman, back to that one point. So on the last section here, appointment of independent counsel, the governor said that, and because of time, it looks like if we add this, it had to go back to the Senate for concurrence anyway. It's a House bill now, so we're adding it. You want to expedite this. Is this so crucial to have it in that you need it now?
Representative Martin, through the chair, yes, and we still believe we've got enough time to take this through the Senate.
Okay.
What action does the committee wish in regards to committee substitute for House Bill number 534, Finance Amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Terrio?
Very brief, it is.
Sure.
It's
already adopted. Move that one second.
Yes.
Page 58, that we delete the new section 87 and renumber accordingly.
But didn't we just adopt that?
I thought we already addressed that when we accepted the work draft.
Mm-hmm. We set it for voting.
Okay, Representative Martin, we'll entertain your motion that we delete section 87.
Yes, sir. Okay. And renumber accordingly.
Okay, discussion. What page is that? Oh,
page 58.
Okay.
Section 87.
Okay, we have a motion by Representative Martin that we delete section 87. Discussion on that motion. Representative Navarre.
Yeah. You guys has the division evaluated this provision?
Go ahead. Representative Navarre, through the chair, we've looked at the provision. The Division of Insurance is neutral on the provision. The provision, as stated in Section 87, is contained in similar language in our statute right now in Section 36090, which is a similar any willing provider statute, but only applies to insurers. The difference being under 87 is a different animal than an insurer, as you discuss here today. 87 only applies to one entity, and that entity being Blue Cross, and any entity doing subscriber contracts in the state of Alaska.
Mr. Chairman, I'll object to the amendment.
Representative Navarre?
Yeah. Here's my biggest problem with the amendment, and that is that while I've heard about it the last couple of days, you know, the idea of an amendment like this, the draft comes out today. This is controversial. You know, it happens every year at this time whenever we have an important piece of legislation that needs to get through the process. Invariably, we have some of the lobbyists who make their living in the end of session tacking on either important to their interests, not always entirely in the public interest, and not only that, hard to understand what the overall impacts are going to be. We see it in the last few days of session, and some of the people who are opposing this do the same thing. And the people who are promoting this, of course, do the same thing. It's one of the frustrations that I have with this point in the session, and that is that we get these things and we get lobbied, really, with a very superficial, not in-depth discussion about what the overall impacts are going to be, and we pass them. A lot of times we pass them because we don't want the legislation that it's tied onto to end up dying, and that's my concern and why I will be voting no or yes for the amendment to take this section out.
Any further discussion, Representative Hanley?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask the department, and I have similar concerns just because, and it may be a good idea or it may not. I don't understand the competition differences and whether, I understand this will help the consumer, it will not limit their choices. My concern is that through the bidding process, there won't be an incentive at all to provide these provider programs, so there won't be a reduction in cost. My concern is, this is, as you said, directed at one particular company. If we're going to make this a policy statement, then we ought to do it for everybody. Are there other people that are going to be able to come in and do similar things with either these two hospitals or others because this isn't addressed? I mean, is this an across-the-board policy, or are there other groups that are not medical service corporations that can do a similar thing, whether for drugs or treatment services? And I guess that's my question. Is there somebody else other than Blue Cross that can do this? And if so, maybe we either need to expand this or not have it.
Mr. Sykes?
Representative Hanley, through the chair. Let me go back and explain. Insurance companies are regulated under 09 of our title. Medical service providers, medical service and hospital organizations, as listed in this section 87, are distinctly different. They go out and secure a contract, again, based on the number of people that they can send to this hospital. currently in practice in law, 36090, the hospital, even though they have a policy, case in point, our Aetna policy, our state policy, they have a policy of insurance with us. We are allowed to go to any provider that whom we choose. Now, I think the example of the eye care people were brought up. That is a separate contract within Aetna, the insurance policy, with VSP, which is a medical service corporation. The difference there is you go to the VSP doctor. If you go outside that doctor, you pay a higher fee because the contract provided between Aetna and VSP states that you will only go to these doctors signed up with VSP. If you go to a doctor outside, they will only pay a percentage, usually 75%, of what they normally would have paid, which would have been 80% under a VSP doctor. So what this provision does, it removes that 5% gap. Mm-hmm. It says if you go to another doctor and they're willing, outside your preferred provider agreement, and they're willing to provide the service for the same cost that is contained in your agreement with your subscriber, and that's the price they will pay.
So, Mr. Chairman, is this going to affect the state's plan then?
No, it will not.
Because they're not a medical service corporation, the VSP people.
Correct.
You know, so and it may be a good idea. I don't know. It sounds like we've got this, it may not be the exact same language, but the same thing's going on now, where if I want to go to an optometrist or an ophthalmologist, if they're not on the list, I got to pay a lot more. But under this scenario, a little different, because if I want to go to a different hospital, my insurance company won't even cover me. Is that correct?
Representative Hanley, through the Chair Larson, they will cover you, but there will be a penalty clause, and that's what they write into the subscriber contract.
Okay.
If this was adopted, going back to your earlier question as to how it would affect your current contract, if you went to a doctor outside the list provided by VSP, VSP would be obligated to pay the same price as long as that provider charged the same price or was willing to meet the price negotiated in your subscriber contract.
But you right. said this particular amendment will not affect that VSP program.
No, it will not, because again, that the reason being, you have to understand, our contract is with Aetna, not with VSP.
But if it
will, I mean, this is my concern too with this amendment. If this is a policy call we want to make, and it may be a reasonable one, then it's not going to be applied across the board. My other question was specifically, though, I don't understand all the different types of health organizations that are out there. I don't know. This says a hospital or medical service corporation, and it specifically talks to them. Are there other organizations that could come in and negotiate similar to what's being done now? Is there any other type of service that could come in and negotiate and not be covered under this particular language?
Representative Hanley, through the Chair, no, there is not. We have, in our insurance code, we have accounted for all those different types of organizations, being preferred provider, hospital, medical service, health maintenance.
But we're going to see a difference in how they're treated if you're a medical service corporation versus if you're one of the other regulated under the other side.
Representative Hanley, through the Chair, no. This provision here, and again, let me go back and explain. This provision put in Chapter 87 does apply to this one entity. However, we already have a provision similar to this in 36 that does apply to the other organizations that I spoke to.
And how can we continue to have a state health plan that would not be allowed under this? If a medical service corporation chose to offer the same plan, the vision service plan, as we have as a state organization, it appears to me they would not be able to do that under this particular language, yet the state can, and that's what I'm trying to... We've got this over here and this over here, and preferred provider program, and this amendment's dealing with specifically medical service corporations, and you're saying a similar provision...
Representative Hanley, through the Chair, let me back up. What you're talking about is a contract within a contract. For the state plan, it will affect it. I shall digress. If this is adopted, then VSP or eye care folks will have to comply with this provision.
Okay, further discussion? Representative
Markham. Mr. Chairman, one and two things. First, is there another provider of services that may be concerned about this? I know that we do have the main hospital, Humana, giving that service point of view, but I think the other providers of service And I know how quick we roll these calendars, and they may not have known. So if there's another spokesperson for Providence or whoever. And then also, as you mentioned, Mr. Seitz, this is mostly against Blue Cross Blue Shield at this moment. What's to prevent Aetna, or, you know, we switch back and forth for the best deal next year when our contract is up. If Blue Cross gives us a good deal, better than what Aetna does right now, do we then make a law against Aetna?
Representative Martin, to the chair.
You have to ask yourself that, not the department, because you're the one that makes the laws. They don't.
Well, I'm asking him which way I should make the law.
Once you ask me, I'll give you advice.
Further discussion.
Well, so there's another provider, someone else that feels this is going to impact them. There's a gentleman here representing somebody.
Representative Parnell.
I'm going to be casting my vote on the same basis. The Representative Navarre is on the basis of the process and not on, and similar to what Representative Hanley said, I don't know whether this is a good idea or not. We haven't fully investigated whether, arguments can be made on both sides that this amendment violates basic economic freedoms of contract mm-hmm. between companies and their membership or their insureds. We haven't. Should we do the same for banks and tour operators and airlines? And I mean, each area is regulated in one way or the other, and we haven't looked at the impacts down the line. We haven't looked at whether why we're targeting one company here, as opposed to making it across the board type of deal. Representative Cherry's comment on whether we really have an incentive for lower prices in with this kind of an amendment. I don't know. Raises some questions in my mind, and so I'm just objecting on the basis that the process is the end of session, jamming it through. That's what I'm objecting to, just like I did last year during the phone wars for the same reason. So I do not know whether this is a good idea, and on that basis I'm going to vote no.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman McLean.
Yes, one of the things that we need to look at is if you're an agency, let's say a state agency, and you want to go for the lowest bid and you're trying to save dollars, then that's what you do, is you get a preferred provider services. And when you look at it from a rural area, and again, I give the example, North Slope Borough, Northwest Arctic Borough, and they're tight on dollars, or AVCP, any organization that wants to have other than PHS services, then they go for the lowest bid from all these other medical corporations, then they're saving their dollars within that regime. So that's why I support this being in there.
Are you Representative Ruthenberg?
Whether it's Blue Cross or not.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's been a lot of discussion about agencies, insurance companies, doctors, hospitals. And I always put it on a simpler basis for me. I wonder, well, what would I want and what would my constituents want to do in relation with the bill? In that case, I happen to like the provision in the bill.
Further discussion? Will the clerk please call the question? And the motion was to delete Section 87.
Representative Martin.
Yes.
Representative Navarre.
Yes.
Representative Parnell.
Yes.
Representative Terrio.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Buesendorf.
No.
Representative Hanley.
Yes.
Representative Hoffman.
No.
Representative McLean.
No.
Representative Larson?
No.
5 yea, 6 nay.
Okay, please note that the motion has failed adoption. We have further discussion. Representative Brown?
Mr. Chairman, there's one other issue that if I could get assistance in passing this out, that I think Representative Hanley is aware of, and if we could have Ms. Gall speak briefly.
Could have who?
Sherry Gall.
Oh, okay.
And it would be that I'm having distributed now the language. This is not drafted as an amendment, but it's now part of House Bill 545, and it deals with an issue that is covered under this chapter, and it would prevent health insurance companies from discriminating against licensed marital and family therapists whenever the company offers coverage for mental health services. and it does not mandate new coverage, but generally when these groups have gotten professional recognition, they've been included in this non-discrimination insurance statute. And this was the case with the marital and family therapists who got the recognition last year, and they have since formed their professional licensing board. And if possible, we would like to include this within this bill.
What committee is this bill in now?
House Rules.
House Rules.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
I would say that I would oppose this amendment, and because it is yanking a bill from a committee.
Mm-hmm. Well, another way to look at it is we're sending it to the same committee where it already is. We're just including it within this vehicle. So we're not really yanking it. It's already ahead of itself there. We're just saying this horse may ride. And
what I want to do to expedite things here is I'd like to recognize Ms. Gall, and then ask for a response from the department following Ms. Gall. Ms. Gall?
You know what she's going to say. Hey, if I don't have lecture.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sherry Gall, and today I'm representing the Alaska Association of Marital and Family Therapists. And there are two bills, separate bills that do this, and one of them is in House Rules, and the other one is a Senate bill, and it is in the Senate committee. It simply adds this profession to the unfair discrimination statute. The House bill was a House Labor and Commerce Committee bill introduced late in the session and arrived at House Rules too late to be considered for calendaring. At least that's what we are told about it. It does not add any mandate. It simply adds them to the list of licensed providers who, if the services, the type of service that they offer, which is mental health services in this case, that their profession will not be unfairly discriminated against with the other licensed providers who also provide mental health services. These folks provide these services at a lower cost to some of the others, so it's a choice situation, a freedom of choice situation for consumers, and we believe would be a cost-saving measure for both the consumers and the insurers.
Thank you. Mr. Reinwand?
For bills getting no amendments, Mr. Chairman, I've got a few that I want to consider at some point. Thank you. This is an effect. The effect is that this is a mandate. It's a backdoor mandate, but that's the effect of it. And I guess my question is, where does it stop? Each year these things are added, and I guess the reason that Blue Cross, representing Blue Cross Washington, Alaska, I guess we're sensitive to it. We get pounded over the head when rates increase, but this is exactly the kind of thing that drives up rates.
Thank you. And Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, we object to including this amendment in this bill. It should be taken up on its own merits as part of the separate bill, and this is the type of thing that's going to really cause us problems trying to get this passed. This is a consumer protection bill dealing with solvency of insurance companies. We had to go in and put Homestead Insurance into receivership last year, and luckily we were able to do it in a way that didn't hurt the policyholders, but we could end up with an executive life type situation up here, and that's what this bill is trying to prevent.
Okay. We have a motion from Representative Brown. Will you repeat your motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we include this language as a new section within this bill.
Okay, a further discussion?
Objection.
Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Navarre.
No.
Representative Parnell.
No.
Representative Theriault.
No.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Grusendorf.
No.
Representative Hanley.
No.
Representative Hoffman.
Yes.
Representative Martin.
No.
Representative Larson.
No.
Representative McLean.
No.
Chair Ye.
Any further discussion? Chairman McLean.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move CS for HB 534 Finance amended out of committee with individual recommendations.
Yes.
Okay, we have objections. Any discussion? Okay, would the clerk call the roll to move from committee?
Representative Trejo.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Grisendorf.
Yes.
Representative Hanlon.
Yes.
Representative Hoffman.
Yes.
Representative Martin.
Yes.
Representative Navar.
No.
Representative Parnell.
No.
Representative Larson.
Yes.
Representative McClain.
Yes.
9 yea, 2 nay.
Okay, please note then that committee substitute for House Bill number 534, Finance Amendment, has moved from committee with individual recommendations, and we'll stand in recess now to
Senator Hoffman. You're not allowed to vote here anymore, sir.
Yeah.
The chair would move that the vehicle we have before us for consideration is the work draft and ask if there's any objections. And no objections, then that motion has been adopted. So here we have Representative Nordland on House Bill 364. Basically, would you tell us what the work draft does in addition to what was in the bill before?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill has changed significantly from the last time you heard it. And I just want to say I support the changes. In fact, I highly support the changes. Basically, what it is it provides for two checkoffs on the dividend application for contributions to the Iditarod Trail Committee and also to the Alaska Children's Trust Fund. I think that the committee is well aware of the situation with the Iditarod race, losing sponsorship, and I think this is a very good solution to help continue to fund that race. And as far as the Alaska Children's Trust Fund goes, this is something that's been on the books for a long time. We've had trouble finding a revenue source for it, and it's supported by many groups around the state, and I think it's fortunate that we're able to combine kids and dogs here. I think it's a kind of a cute combination, and I hope that the House will can pass it in this form with no additions, and I hope it goes that way through the Senate also.
Thank you. Representative Hoffman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've always opposed checkoffs because I was informed that they were a communist plot.
I see.
Checkoffs.
What?
What are they plotting?
I've never been that hot on checkoffs either, because if someone can do it, they already can do it, but this will help keep the peace. I'm all for the peace. Do we have any further discussion on committee substitute for House Bill 364? Yes, Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Williams, Director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division of the Department of Revenue. I would like to indicate that there is a fiscal impact to any checkoff. The department has historically opposed checkoffs for a variety of reasons. The principal purpose of the dividend program is to pay eligible Alaska residents, not to promote any other programs or organizations, nor provide a mechanism for eligible Alaskans to donate to a program or organization of their choice. I think probably the biggest concern that the department has is that if one organization is given the opportunity to advertise and promote contributions via the dividend application or booklet, that it really opens it up for a whole variety. And just briefly, since 1987, there have been Alaska Voluntary Health Agencies, Alaska State Council of the Arts, Public Broadcasting, Special Olympics, Winter Games, ANWR. It goes on and on and on and on. And all of those have requested to be on the application in the past. The department's position remains that they have those concerns. There is a cost. There would be a fiscal note attached to that fiscal note would require a general fund appropriation in the first year, notwithstanding the provision in there that would have the costs come out of the proceeds, because the upfront costs would occur in fiscal year 95. Proceeds would not be available until fiscal year 96, so it would have to be front-loaded with a general fund appropriation. It could be reimbursed out of the proceeds in subsequent years.
What is the amount?
The amount that we project for two checkoffs, and that is the absolute limit of what we could put on the application. We'll have to expand the application anyway. $32,300 would be the cost to be appropriated from the general fund, and we'll be glad to prepare a fiscal note associated with that. In subsequent years, the cost of administering the program would be $11,800. Excuse me. I read the wrong fiscal note. The cost of that was for one checkoff. For the two checkoffs, it is a $36,000 general fund appropriation in fiscal year 95, and subsequent year costs would be $15,500.
Okay, any questions of Mr. Williams, Representative Parnell?
Thank you. Mr. Williams, you said historically the department has opposed checkoffs. Does the department take a position on this checkoff?
With respect to the Iditarod, we're well aware of the problems that they're encountering, and we certainly understand that. Therefore, while we would not necessarily oppose that per se, our general position is we don't support checkoffs. I mean, it wouldn't be a... We can understand the situation with regard to one checkoff. But with... I think the idea that first came forward was that there would be one checkoff, and I think we see the natural outgrowth starting already when we're adding additional checkoffs.
So you're saying the department's been drawn it with reservations? Is that what I'm hearing?
I think that's an accurate description.
Okay. And then you also mentioned that many groups have tried to do this in the past, and I can certainly understand the problems associated with that. Has any group ever gotten on the permanent fund dividend checkoff
before? There has only been one checkoff on the program as far as a donation to something external, and that has been the the Anchorage Olympics, and that was on the application from 1986 through 1989.
This particular bill contains a provision at line 10, page 2, that says that the section applies only to dividends for 95, 96, and 97. Is that workable for the department for 3 years?
We can administer the bill with the fiscal note that we had suggested and would be attaching as it came out of. It's possible to do it, yes.
Any further discussion? Representative Brown.
Thank you. I'm wondering whether we should direct Mr. Williams, if this were to pass, that he should briefly describe what the purpose of the Alaska Children's Trust Fund is, or we could also insert for prevention of child abuse or neglect after fund on line 3 of page 2. And I think people are generally familiar with the Iditarod. I'm not sure that everyone would be familiar with the purposes of why there is a Children's Trust Fund, and that either if that could be included on the checkoff in the application form, or we could just add those words right there. And I was just wondering if Mr. Williams had a comment on that.
Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown. This fiscal note is, right now the application is pretty well stretched. We actually have to increase the size of the application. The fiscal note is predicated on the fact that we would include on the application itself a statement that said, would you like to donate, or do you want to donate $10 of your dividend to A, the Iditarod Trail Committee, B, the Alaskan Children's Trust Fund. The only other description of that would be in the application booklet instructions, and that would be limited basically to a 2 or 3 line per option discussion of, I mean, it does not include an elaborate discussion of all the things that the trail committee does or that the trust fund
does.
But
that would be a brief 2 or 3 line description anyway in the voter form so people would know.
In the application instructions, that's correct. And that's basically analogous to what was done on the Olympic checkoff.
Representative Navar.
On the form, would it be possible to put for the Alaska Children's Trust Fund for Prevention of Child Abuse or Neglect? Is that too much to have on the form?
We're really stretching it right now with regard to even having the room to get that much of a question on the
answer. Is it because it's in a box? Because if it's in a line, it would be, I mean, certainly that much could fit on one line.
We have, basically the fiscal note is, whenever you start adding words pretty soon, it starts to get cramped and cramped and cramped. I guess we've we've looked at it, we've tried to figure out what is reasonable, and we've tried to keep it as brief as possible to the extent that there was in the one remaining line enough room to get something additional in. We would certainly be willing to try, but I could not confirm that, but that would happen.
That was letter of intent.
Okay.
One more question.
If there's any more, we're going to put this bill aside and allow the subcommittee to go to work. Representative Parnell?
Mr. Lynn, does checkoff impair anybody's ability with respect to the direct deposit option?
Under current procedures, the anyone who requests or signs part of their dividend, and essentially this is an assignment of your dividend or a portion of it, signs a portion of their dividend, they would not qualify for direct deposit. We are not, our system does not allow for that at this point, and to change our system to allow anybody whose dividend is garnished, attached, or assigned to also qualify for direct deposit would involve some substantial reprogramming at this point, and that is not included. That assumes that people would be advised of that fact. It also assumes that if somebody's dividend fell below $10, or excuse me, $20, if there's both these options on there, that we would honor the first one on the list and not honor the second one. And if it fell below $10, we wouldn't honor their request for the checkoff.
Any further questions? Representative Henley?
I just want to make a comment. I don't have a particular problem. In fact, I'm supportive of both the purposes, but I am opposed to the bill in that, if we're going to debate this issue, I think we need to debate it. And there's a lot of good organizations out there, mm-hmm. and I think I put some as a higher priority than some of these. And if we're going to, and this is the problem with the dividend checkoff. And, I personally am not willing to just say, well, because these two came up at the right time or something, that I'm willing to support that. And for that reason, I just let people know right now that I won't be supporting this particular legislation.
Representative Martin?
Just comment. I'm of the same nature. I have two organizations that I've favored for years. And on the floor, if time comes, I will put them on for checkoff.
Further discussion? Well, we do have the bill before us, committee substitute for House Bill 364. Finance.
I'd like to move it, Mr. Chairman, with the attached fiscal notes.
Okay. We have a motion by Representative Foster to move this bill from committee with individual recommendations, and we will receive the fiscal notes to go with it. Any discussion on the motion?
Did you adopt the committee substitute already?
Yes. Any further discussion? Any objections to the motion? Hearing none, then committee substitute for House Bill 364 Finance has moved from committee with individual recommendations. In the accompanied fiscal note, okay, at this time we're going to stand in recess so that the subcommittee on 310 will have some time to do their work this afternoon.
Where's my staff? I need my staff in here.